is the Tim Conway Jr. Show live on 97.1 FM Talk. On this Thursday, we're taking the show on the road down to the Staples Center to watch the Los Angeles Kings take on the St. Louis Blues. So try to get down there. Enjoy the game. Lycus, I think, will pop by. Always nice to see Tommy down there. I think Frank Kramer will be there.
Frank Kramer here.
Yes. And we're looking for Adam Carolla as well. I think he's going to show up.
Nice job, retards.
Thank you very much.
And Tim?
Yes,
ma'am. If I might just say, it's not official, so I can't really say, but it's very possible that I might be doing something very embarrassing during the Kings game.
Really?
Let's just leave it at that.
Well, like showing up early?
Oh.
I don't know why I said that. But what are you going to be doing then?
It's unconfirmed.
Oh, I know what you're
going to
do.
You're
going to be like in charge of like between like maybe the first and second round on the ice judging a contest
or
something?
It's possible. Something like that might happen.
Is that right?
It's possible.
Jesus Christ.
Jesus Christ.
They use that word celebrity real loosely.
Oh, man. They've never asked me to do that.
Really?
Never.
Because they know you'd say no.
No, I'd definitely say yes. All right. Joining us, addiction medicine specialist dealing in relationships, sex, and drugs. Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Reef, nice to see you, my brother.
Hey, thanks for having me here.
Look at you. Now, before we get into the news, you know a lot about boxing, and you know, and you're well schooled in the game.
Yeah, I used to work ringside with an Olympic neurologist at a lot of the Golden Gloves fights, a lot of Tommy Morris and George Foreman fights,
right.
During med school, actually.
Now, would you have let that fight go on, the De La Hoya fight?
I mean, just for, there's two things you're looking at. You're looking at it from the standpoint of, is the boxer's health in question?
Right.
I don't think so. And the other is it a fight you just need to stop? Because the boxer's just not fighting. He's not putting
it's so
up a good fight. That was a very one-sided fight. So I could have seen that being stopped early, but not necessarily for his health, but more just, at some point down the road, if you're just getting pummeled nonstop by another fighter, you got to stop it.
Right. Now, they don't have, in the corner anymore, there's no such thing as a cut man anymore, right?
Yeah, you don't see that. You don't see that much anymore.
They used to, right?
Yeah. They
if the guy got puffy, they'd cut it open.
Yeah, they'd do what they got to do.
And they'd either sew it shut or freeze it.
Yeah, you don't see that.
Is that what that little iron is where they try to push the swollen, blood-filled part of his under his eye? Is that like a cold compress?
Yeah, usually it's a cold compress because you want to vasoconstrict, which means clamp down on the artery so you don't see so much blood.
Right.
Right? But it comes down to, there's some stuff in medicine that we see that looks really bad.
Right.
Like guys are gushing blood all over the place and you're like, wow, that guy's done.
Yeah.
But it's not so bad. It's actually just a superficial cut or a superficial problem. But there's other things like neurology. If you've gotten enough concussions, it's not like your eyes roll to the back of your head right away.
Right.
Eventually that may happen, but a guy takes enough hits to the head, you're going to see head trauma down the road.
Well, that's why I think in the NHL, and I'm not sure if this is an official policy or not, or an unwritten policy, but I think after six or seven concussions, they don't let you play anymore.
Yeah.
What is the key number there?
I don't know the exact number for the NHL,
For a person, is it six or seven before you get brain damage?
I'll tell
damage?
You what, you could have brain damage after three. You could have brain damage after one.
Is that right?
It just depends on the hit, where it hits you, how well protected you are, if you have a history of concussions. I mean, there's so many factors. So you just kind of, the more, let's be honest, the more you get hit, the more concussions you have, the more chance you're going to have problems.
Right. Now, how long, like you saw Oscar De La Hoya after the fight, that eye was swollen shut.
Yeah.
And he really looked like, a train hit him. Is he in pain for 2 days, 5 days, 2 weeks after that?
Well, physical pain, probably like a week or two.
A week or two.
Emotional pain, a lifetime.
Yeah.
It's just like...
And again, for a, and we got a lot of calls in the last hour for a quote-unquote Mexican boxer to, end his career sitting on that stool. A lot of those guys, it's no buenos dias.
Yeah, that was rough for him, because he had so much to lose on that fight, and he did.
Yeah.
You'll make a lot of money, but...
Well, he's a huge promoter. He's not going to worry about money, but I think he should have worried about his reputation. He obviously thought he would not ever, ever in his life get his ass kicked
that. Yeah, I'm sure he didn't.
Yeah.
And just as far as stopping the fight, the ringside doctors, we're trained... like to really focus and look at the neurological signs and look at what's happening.
What are
to
they?
That
what
fighter.
Are some of the neurological signs?
Well, you can see there's something called nystagmus where somebody has beats with their you know like when cops when you get if you happen to ever get pulled over. I'm looking at Randy right now, but if you happen to ever get pulled over if you've been drinking and or even if you haven't, they'll do a nystagmus test where they put a finger up like,
right.
in front of your eyes and they make you follow the fingers with your eyes as you look straight ahead.
Right.
They're looking for beats of nystagmus. The beats of nystagmus are when it like it goes to one side laterally and then it shoots back.
Oh,
and it keeps shooting back as you keep going.
Right.
They look.
So if you can't smoothly watch a finger, something's going on with you.
Yeah, generally. I mean, it depends on how quick they're doing it. And it depends on the procedure of how the cops are doing it. But you could have head trauma or you could be drunk.
Now, so what you would recommend is if you are drinking drive, which you should never do, to wear a boxing uniform and gloves and just say, hey,
or
man.
A big bandage around your head.
Just
yeah.
a mouth guard.
Yeah. What's that? This is my injury.
Yeah. I just
a long time ago.
Just Pac-Man beat the hell out of me.
Yeah. It's interesting because when I was doing training, this was in medical school, and I was sitting ringside and I was so close, the guys would like get hit and their sweat would like fly past us, right? But the ring girl sat next to us and I'm like this med student who's trying really hard and is really diligent and trying to focus on everything. And the ring girls would be wearing nothing.
Oh, yeah. They're all strippers.
Yeah, they're all strippers, yeah. right? A bunch of strippers are sitting next to me, and they're like, wow, you're really young to be a doctor.
Oh, man.
And they start talking to me all the time, and they keep trying to distract you, because they know, because I'm like Mr. Diligent Guy trying to be a good doctor.
Yeah, that's tough. Very
yeah,
tough.
It's a tough life, right?
All right. We are going to do news like we do every single night. We're starting a little late here, but nevertheless, we'll get to it. Ladies and gentlemen, news with Gina Grad, everybody.
The news with Gina Grad.
Now, say what you will about John Popper, the man can really write a song.
Give us 8.5 minutes, and we'll give you, well, that.
All right, Gina, what's going on with that news?
Well, I guess in breaking news, I just drooled on myself. I can't believe everybody missed that.
Did you really? What's going on with you?
I was taking a sip of water, and, like, it just, something happened. It just, I don't know.
Yeah, that happens.
Yeah.
To, like, babies.
Yeah.
And old folks.
I have a problem shutting my mouth.
All right, what's going on with that news?
Superintendent of the Los Angeles Unified School District, David Brewer, has more than 2 years left on his contract, but he has decided that he wants out now. Brewer is requesting that the remainder of his contract is bought out and has made it clear that it's not because he's been bad at his job, boasting one of the highest dropout rates in history. No, he wants to leave because of all the alleged racial overtones he has come up against as superintendent.
Right.
Yep. In this clip, Brewer elaborates on this issue.
All right, here we go.
This must not become an ethnic battle that infests our schools, our campuses, our playgrounds. This is not about settling old scores. This must be about what is best for LAUSD students.
This sounds real pissed. Remember when he started? He was so upbeat and happy and calm.
Sky was the limit for learning.
2 years later, this is what we get.
This must not become an ethnic battle that infests our schools, our campuses, our playgrounds.
All right, folks. I know I do this all the time, but perhaps you're just tuning in for the first time. Here's the goal in life. Keep your kids out of LAUSD, okay? Whatever you have to do, whether you have to move out of Los Angeles, whether you have to get another job, whether you have to sell a car, or whether your wife has to go out and be a hooker, keep your kids out of LAUSD. They will break the spirit of your children, and your children will become nightmares. Your children will become somebody you don't recognize after a while. It is not built for the students. It is not built for human beings. It's built for animals. So try to keep, if you love your children, you'll keep them out of LAUSD. Move out to, I don't know, move to Valencia. Move to Riverside. Find a job out there. Sell a car or get an extra job. Please don't put your kids into this prison. That's what it is. It's a prison system for these kids.
General Pop.
Yeah.
So
all right.
What are you really trying to say?
See, I went through it, and I know kids that have gone through it. You know, all my brothers and my sister, we're all products of LAUSD, but it was a different time. It was in the 70s and 80s. And now they're just, it's an S-hole. You know, the system is way too big. They don't really care about individual kids. They throw as many in there as they possibly can. And then they try to keep them there every single day until they turn 18 and then they let them loose. but it's not a place that really, I know firsthand, it's not a place that cares about kids. And that's what you don't want. You don't want your, you don't want to put your kid into a situation where nobody cares about them. And that's what happens at LAUSD.
And you're a product of an LAUSD education.
Yeah. I'm well, you know, back in the 70s days, and again, there are a few LAUSD schools that are very good. I know Taft High School in the Valley wins awards for academics all the time. There are a few, you know, elementary schools. I think Lanai Road is a decent one. Wilbur is a decent one. And I'm not sure what else you know, is out there. But I know that most of these schools, especially the high schools, are just, you know, hell holes. They're just like, you know, places to you know, sort of warehouse a kid until he's 18. Mm. And there he goes.
But you could be the poster child. The LAUSD kid.
Well,
that made it.
I think there's a lot worse off than me, but I could be the poster child. Adam Carolla, myself, both went through LAUSD. I don't know anybody else on the air here that went through LAUSD.
No.
I think, did Danny Bonaducci? I don't think he did.
Yeah, no, I think he did.
He did?
Didn't he grow up in Tarzana?
He went to a special school.
Oh, well, but he
was doing Partridge Family, you know?
Yeah.
But he went to the same school as Michael Jackson and a couple other famous
people. Is
that
right?
Yeah.
Wow. Look at that guy. All right. What else going on in the news there, Gina?
Well, in entertainment news, NBC is expected to announce tomorrow that it has signed its late night star, Jay Leno, to a new contract that will keep him at the network in a new format. Are you ready for this? That will give him the 10 p.m. time period.
Wow.
That's a great story.
Yeah.
Whoa,
each weeknight for a show similar to the one he's done on NBC since 1993. 5 years ago, NBC announced that it would give the job of host of that franchise late night show to Conan O'Brien in May 2010. Since then, the network has maneuvered to try to keep Mr. Leno in some capacity anyway, fearing that he could leave and start a new late night show as a competitor. The offer of a new weeknight show for Mr. Leno at 10 p.m. not only allows NBC to retain Mr. Leno's services, but very, very importantly, it also means the network may be able to greatly reduce costs of developing and producing other primetime shows. Very expensive.
You know, this is going to lead to tomorrow, there's going to be a very uncomfortable news conference, press conference, where these guys, you know, like Carson, Leno, or Letterman, anytime, you know, they have to go on to announce their new deal, they're very uncomfortable doing that.
Right.
You know, they're comedians that, you know, they want to do their own show, and all of a sudden they're put in front of all these cameras, and they don't feel, I guess, special enough to have, you know, 900 cameras pointing in their direction. They're always like, you know, very uncomfortable about doing this. And he's going to have to go out and split a very uncomfortable situation. He's got to be thrilled to have the 10 p.m. slot at NBC, but he also has to sound very humble that he's signing such a huge deal in a recession that we've never seen before.
Right.
So it's a very uncomfortable situation for him. But I thank God, because I love Leno. I'm glad he's getting the 10 o'clock slot.
Yeah.
I won't be able to watch it anymore because he will be one of my competitors.
Ooh.
And once you're a competitor, you know that I go balls out to try to ruin
destroy
your life.
Destroy you.
Yes, you betcha. But that's going to be odd to see him on at 10 o'clock.
But do you think that's going to be a new trend? Because, you know, show ER, House, you know, CSI, these are expensive shows.
Yes.
Expensive programs.
Yeah, I don't think Leno's is that expensive.
Well, but that's what they're saying. The talk show circuit is so much cheaper than a full.
But I think Leno might be the only guy that can pull this off. I think if anybody else does it, I think they might burn out.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, wait a minute. Oh, okay, it's, I love her, but it's, hey, there's Florence Henderson. hey, look at that. There's another guy with a recipe for, guacamole or something.
Of course, Coldplay.
Coldplay, yeah.
I like Brandon Florence Henderson.
I love Florence Henderson. I actually had dinner once with Florence Henderson.
Oh,
wow.
Nothing.
Oh.
I don't mean to name drop here. And I hate name dropping. It drives me crazy when people do this. And I was at Jerry's Deli about a month ago. With two good friends of mine, Steven Spielberg and Tom Hanks, and we were talking about how rude it is when people name drop.
Yeah, that sucks.
Ugh.
Yeah, I'm so glad you don't do that. As a psychiatrist,
Is that right?
Yeah, I'm really proud of you.
Yeah. You know, speaking of name dropping, and we'll get back to the news, but this happened to me on Sunday. I was at the LA Zoo with my daughter. We go there a bunch because I bought a season pass, so I got to get my money's worth. I'm down to about 8 cents every time I go there. So we're at the LA Zoo and we're watching the monkeys, and this a-hole comes up. There's about 30 people there watching. And there's somebody who works at the LA Zoo. I don't know if she's a volunteer or what, or a specialist with the monkeys. And she's explaining what the monkeys do and who they are, where they're from and all that stuff. And this guy comes up. And he sort of looks like a Rob Reiner, but it wasn't Rob Reiner. And he taps the woman on the shoulder and says, "Excuse me, I'm doing a Hollywood project. I just wrote a script, and we're going to include monkeys like this. Could I ask you a few questions?" And he said it loud enough where everybody could hear what he was saying.
Jesus Christ.
I know, that's what my daughter said. Can you imagine how obvious he was? But I just yelled, you know, there's a group of 20, so he never heard me. You know, didn't know it was I. I'm like, "What an a-hole." But I used the whole term, and he definitely heard it. So if he's listening out there, but that is so, I can't believe people do that nowadays. Excuse me, I'm doing a Hollywood script. Thank you very much. Thank you, folks. Part of my 3-picture deal. And we're going to include these monkeys, so I'd like to ask you a few questions.
What an a-hole.
Why didn't the guy just say, "Hey, listen, I got a few questions for you."
Yeah, right. Never mind why I'm asking.
Why is everybody so, you know, self-promoting around here?
God forbid the volunteer at the zoo doesn't, you know, fawn over him.
Yeah. Well, that's the whole psychology of reality TV. Everybody wants to be a star. Everybody needs that stardom to complete their identity. You know, because you're nobody unless you're a reality star nowadays.
Now, see, I think I have the exact opposite, which I don't think is a plus either. Like, today on Radio and Records, they sent me a thing saying, to everybody who's on the air in radio, they said you get one vote. You can vote for the best show, the best program director, the best general manager, and they're going to compile all the votes. And then on January 30th on RadioAndRecords.com, they list all of the winners, right? So I put in Jack Silver, program director, Bob Moore, Severino, Frank Kramer, you know, Carolla's a syndicated show. And I never put my name down because I think if I could avoid one guy at Radio and Records reading, "Hey, Tim Conway Jr. voted for Tim Conway Jr. What an a-hole."
"Hey, Tim. It's been taken care of."
Hey, aren't those ballots supposed to be secret, though? They're not supposed to know.
Oh,
right?
Who cares? I mean, it's like a, you know, when am I going to go to Radio and Records jail?
Hey, Tim, I got to bust you on this now. On that poll, there was a thing that said best producer. Did you pick me or Gina?
I put you as best producer.
Okay, and just FYI, I put Randy as well. So you can F off, too.
Yeah, I put Gina, I put you down.
Oh, that was sweet.
Yeah. So anyway,
you're way better producer than I am.
All right. Let's not have a fight on who's crappy at their job here.
Back down. What's going on in here?
Yeah, please.
You're right. I'm better.
All right. What else going on with the news there, Gina?
Well, with Paula Goodspeed's suicide still fresh in Paula Abdul's mind, the former pop sensation remains totally shaken up by this event. And, of course, I'm referring to Abdul's stalker who then committed suicide in front of her estate. In this first clip, Abdul reveals to news magazine Show Extra that she is no stranger to being stalked.
Oh, boy. Here we go.
People don't realize that it's been going on for 17, 18 years. I was getting a lot of letters that were very disturbing sent to me and packages and
flowers.
It was scary.
My wife used to work for the florist that this Paula Goodspeed used to come in and buy flowers for Paula Abdul. And I said to my wife, I said, "Didn't you feel sort of obligated to step in and maybe call the cops that this woman was buying flowers for Paula Abdul all the time?" And she goes, "No, they were being sent to her office. It wasn't being sent to her home. She didn't know."
And she, maybe she worked on flower commission.
Yes!
She's not going to stop her.
Yes, please.
Come on. The more birds of paradise, the better.
How about the music in the background here? Listen to the music.
People don't realize that it's been going on for 17, 18 years. I was getting a lot of letters that...
Isn't that the music you hear after, I don't know, maybe the second plane went into the World Trade Center?
I was just going to say, is somebody sneaking up on her with leather gloves in the background and a hockey mask?
This is a woman who's buying her flowers. God almighty. We take the crap so seriously. You're not going to believe this. Breaking news. All right, what else is going on there?
Well, in this next clip, Paula remembers that this wasn't Godspeed's first attempt at suicide at her house.
Oh, boy. Wow, look at that.
A few months prior, she tried it in front of my home. She was like code blue, and they were able to revive her. And I was devastated then. So I just was in very much disbelief this time.
Oh, please. How much in disbelief were you if the woman tried it before?
Right.
You know?
I was in very much disbelief this time.
No, you weren't.
I have a question. Now, obviously, Dr. Reif, you know, is disqualified because, of course, he knows. But do you just randomly know what code blue means?
It sounds important.
She was like, code blue.
She was, I don't know, stat, or, you know, one of those terms you doctors use. What is code blue?
Yeah, we're good with all of our codes. Well, obviously, it's an emergency code.
Is it blue because they might be turning blue?
We just come up with different color schemes.
But that one does exist, right?
Yeah. Code
blue?
Absolutely.
Now, it's been going on for a long time, 17 or 18 years.
Right.
And what causes it? Is that like an illness in and of itself? Where you're
stalking?
Yeah, where you're that infatuated by another person?
Yeah, you graduate from, okay, I think that person's interesting, to I really kind of identify with that person, to I need to make contact with that person, to be, you know, buying things and putting things on their door.
Wow.
Maybe at work. Then you find out where the person lives. Then you need to make physical contact with that person. It just, you kind of graduate as you go along. Sometimes it's a mental illness. You know, a lot of times it is. Sometimes it's just somebody who doesn't have a life of their own and needs to adopt somebody else's life. Or, you know, that whole, remember, you know, like that Paris Hilton BFF that reality show. Like,
right.
It's literally people that are like, I need someone who's well-known to be my friend.
Jesus Christ.
Or to hang out with me. And in this case, it was a really serious, serious problem along the way.
Now, but does that obsession sort of consume your life?
Oh, yeah.
It does.
Most of these people have shrines. They hang out at home and they got a big poster. Like, I had a patient, they had an entire wall. Like a wall. You know, you get a digital picture and you blow it up into the size of a wall.
Oh.
And they had that person with big eyes staring at them in their living room on their wall.
Talking to it.
Everywhere they went. Yeah, probably who knows what they were doing. But, you know, there's something called erotomania. And erotomania is when you think somebody who's like a celebrity or somebody's a VIP person or whatever is in love with you. So, literally, I've had patients that were, like, stalking some major celebrity, thinking that celebrity really wanted them and was in love with them. So, they just write them letters like, hey, remember that when we were, like, used to hang out?
Dr. Reif, you got to help me shake DiCaprio. It's getting ridiculous.
I wish I had an ounce of that kind of confidence, though.
Yeah, you got a lot of guts to do that.
I mean, you're that confident that that person who doesn't know you isn't totally in love with you.
Yeah,
like Shauna Woolsey used to work with us, Woolies, as my daughter used to call her. She was our screener for some time, and she was convinced that Paul McCartney was in love with her, and she was going to have Paul McCartney's kid. I don't think she was that crazy over it. Maybe she was, and I just didn't.
Well, she had the tattoo to prove it.
Yeah,
hello? Hello?
Woolsey, please.
Depends how far you go with it. If you're like some, you know, 300-pound guy in Van Nuys eating like bonbons, and you think Angelina Jolie's in love with
Reif,
you.
Reif, stop looking at me.
Randy.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Subtle as a train wreck there.
Reif.
Well, you know, I totally forgot about this, but I remember when I was in high school, I was really into this one singer in this one band, and I thought, okay,
Menudo.
Yes, okay, it was Ricky Martin, and I was going to write a fan letter, which I'd never done before, and I was so excited. I wanted it to be really cute, and I wanted, you know, when they got it, because I'm sure it went straight to their house, I wanted them to be excited about it and be like, wow, she's really creative. So what did I do? I started cutting out letters from a magazine.
What?
And I was like, oh my God, this is going to be so cute. And I was done. I was like, oh my God. This is what serial killers do. I was 15. I didn't realize it, but thank God it didn't get sent.
Jesus Christ.
It was like, I think you are so amazing with like the cutout letters.
Oh man.
So I feel you.
2 years old when you did that?
I was like 15.
15.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
All right. What else going on in the news there, Gino?
Thank God.
God almighty.
The Tribune Company, which is the owner of the Los Angeles Times, has filed for bankruptcy in the latest blow to a newspaper industry from a drop in advertising and a rise of online media. It said the Chicago Cubs baseball franchise and its iconic stadium, Wrigley Field, were not included in the Chapter 11 bankruptcy, but the Tribune's 8 newspapers, 23 television stations, and interactive properties will continue to operate during the reorganization. The company stressed, adding that it has sufficient cash to do that, but after that, they're not sure. I think it's about $70 million.
Wow.
Yeah.
So the LA Times is broke?
Yeah.
Hmm. What happened down there?
Yeah. We're all just looking at each other.
Yeah,
there's so much to say.
We all all wonder what could possibly have happened down there. Do you think the fact that it is a wildly left-wing liberal newspaper maybe had anything to do with it? Well, you know what I think it is? The internet has killed these newspapers.
Yeah.
We take calls. We do this occasionally just to irritate guys who work down there. But if you're 18 to 34 and you're looking to sell a car, buy a car, rent an apartment,
get a hot date,
tickets for a concert, whatever. And we took calls for an hour saying, you know, where do you go? Not one person said the newspaper.
Right.
So if nobody between 18 and 34 is looking to your publication to help them advance either career-wise or sell something, it's over.
Right.
Because, you know, the people who are 90 and 100, they can't read the paper anymore because their eyes are shot. And who's buying this thing, you know? Right. I mean, I saw a stack. This is a very telling moment for the L.A. Times. I was out in front of a deli in the Valley on Sunday, and I walk out of the deli at around 12:30, 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and the L.A. Times little paper stand there is filled with papers. Filled with papers.
And that's a Sunday?
Sunday at 1 o'clock. I mean, how many people have walked by it and given the no sign to?
Heisman.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm not going there. You know, part of this is instant gratification society. We want to know what the news is like that minute.
Well, because we can.
If something happens, and I know, if you're listening, you're like, economy's going to give us this whole timeline thing. Yeah, you're right, I'm going to. But if something happens like at 11:30 at night or midnight on Friday, maybe there's a shooting or a car wreck or a police chase or whatever, that story is not going to be read in the LA Times by you until Sunday.
Jesus,
it's
going to
miss Saturday's publication or distribution, and then it's going to be in Sunday. It's going to be in the Sunday Times.
Yeah.
Now, that story may have changed 500 times between Friday at midnight and Sunday at 10 in the morning. So you have to go onto the LA Times website, which is free, and read it there. So why do you get the newspaper?
Right.
Well, it is sort of an archaic thing to see all those resources as well. All the paper, I don't know what it's made out of. I guess there's still mostly trees. A lot of it might be recycled. I don't know. But still, it seems like a lot of, physical resources are being put into this LA Times where you can literally go on the website and read it for free.
Well, that's what we were talking about the night of the election. I thought, is this going to be like 1930s style? Like a little kid in a pork pie hat has one stack of McCain face newspapers and one stack of Obama face? Like just waiting to see from the signal from the window which one to throw from the truck? Like what do you do at that point?
They were very lucky it happened, at 8 o'clock sharp,
Where
Obama won. But if that went on until 11:30, 12 at night.
I better get busy.
The one thing, though, is the next day I wanted to get, just as a memento, I wanted to get a newspaper with a big caption of Obama winning. And, I could not find a paper anywhere. I was like 7:30 in the morning. I could not find a paper anywhere.
Yeah. I sent my brother on the task of finding because I had to work that day. And he's like, well, what do you want? I got one in Thai and I got one in Spanish. It has his picture on it. There's nothing left.
Yeah, well, that's the one day where they're going to make some money.
Yeah,
I'd go for Ty.
Yeah. The squigglies.
And you know what the LA Times should have done? On that day, they should have printed a million more copies.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. The
one day
half million more dollars.
The one day they can make money, they're run out.
They ran out crazy.
See, that's why they're bankrupt. I mean, come on.
I know. And then, you pick up the LA Times, and there's one out there, and I should pick it up. But you go through it, and it's story after story after story that you go, who gives an F? You know, the story about, and I hate to bust your balls here because I know you're from India, but they did, or your parents are from India, right?
Yeah.
But
he's
they
from Chicago.
They
great,
did a
great
they
great
did,
grandparents.
Yeah, great 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 grandparents.
Whatever.
But they did a story on a particular flower from India that blooms like every 7 years. I don't know if you're familiar
with it. That's an important story.
Come
on, Tim.
And it was a front page story. And I'm thinking, who is reading this?
Has your heart been replaced with coal?
Yeah, what's wrong with you, man?
Who is looking at
anything.
This? All right. Maybe I'm wrong about this. Maybe it's the greatest paper around. All right, what else is going on in the news there, Gina?
Well, finally, with the multitude of tasks President-elect Obama has to accomplish during his transition period, you can add quitting smoking to that list. Tom Brokaw from the NBC Nightly News sat down with the president-elect recently to grill him on his sporadic smoking. In this clip, Obama defends himself on the subject of occasionally falling off the wagon.
All right, here we go. It's Obama and smoking, man.
The White House is a no-smoking zone. And when you were asked about this recently by Barbara Walters, I read it very carefully. You ducked. Have you stopped smoking?
You know, I have, but what I said was that, there are times where I've fallen off the wagon.
Wait a minute. That means you haven't stopped.
Well, fair enough.
Yeah, no kidding, Tom.
Yeah.
about Tom busting this guy's balls?
Yeah.
I mean, he's the first black American president, and he's under a lot of goddamn pressure.
Yeah.
This economy's in the toilet. He's got to now put together an entire administration and try to make the right moves. And yes, guess what? A little stress comes with that job. And if he has to relieve it by going outside and putting his raincoat on and have a cigarette, who gives a rat's ass?
In fact, I think it's a complete insult and totally insane that you can't smoke in the White House. He's the president of the damn United States. He can do whatever he wants.
All right, here's a quiz for you. Pop quiz for everybody. Which president said it's now going to be illegal to smoke in the White House? Which president said no mas? Randy?
Reagan?
I think that is wrong. Gino?
I'm going to go with Clinton.
Wrong. Anybody? Reef?
Doctor?
Carter.
That's wrong, too. Hillary Clinton.
What?
Yeah. It was Hillary Clinton.
Jesus
Christ. She doesn't get to pick.
I didn't know that.
That's what I'm saying. Wait a minute. Doesn't the president get to pick? But then again, if your husband is putting cigars up the Twinkies, maybe it is time to get a smoking ban going.
Yeah. No more attended flames in this place.
But how crazy is that, that Hillary Clinton said no more smoking? What does she get to rule? He became president, not her.
But he doesn't. But so Obama can be like, well, that was very nice for them. I'm saying they're smoking now.
And you can change it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He could change it in a heartbeat.
He can change it anytime he wants.
And tell everyone to have themselves.
Absolutely. And you know what he should do? He should put his feet up on the Oval Office desk the first day and light up two.
Yep.
Have one burning in the ashtray, smoke in the other one.
Yep.
And when somebody comes in and goes, hey, this is the no smoking room. There's no smoking in the White House. He should say, and this will be great, I'm the president of the White House. I'm the president of the United States. I make the choices and I make the rules. I make the decisions and I'm going to smoke. And not only am I going to smoke, but if you work for me, you're going to smoke.
Yeah.
Ooh. Oh, so that's for smoking now.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Make them all smoke.
That's if he pulls the total like 50s dad, guess what? I'm the king of this castle. It's not a democracy in here, baby.
I hate to say this because a lot of people are going to disagree with me. I have much more respect for the guy that he has an occasional cigarette.
Well, it shows he's mortal.
Yeah,
I think about that.
Right, that he understands the pressure and he's mortal. He's like all of us.
Right.
When you're under pressure, you do some things to relieve it. Whether you have a pop, you know, you have a shot, whether you have a joint, whether you take a pill, whether you have a cigarette, you know, you want to, you know, bring yourself down a little.
And that's the thing. I'm not a chain smoker at all, like at all, but I think it's kind of hot.
Yeah.
I think it's really hot.
I think it's awesome.
You're back to the Marlboro man.
Good for him.
Totally. All right, let's
finish up this clip. Obama is smoking, man.
You know, there are times where I've fallen off the wagon.
Why does Barack Obama, who just became the president of the United States, why does he have to talk to Tom Brokaw like Tom Brokaw is a principal who just caught a sixth grader having a goddamn cigarette? Where is the guy like, you know, Ronald Reagan or the Duke who will say, you know, it's none of your goddamn business? Or Jack Nicholson? You know, why do these guys all have to respond to these a-holes?
Pander.
Jesus Christ, this is irritating. The guy's having a cig a goddamn rat. Just one cigarette every once in a while. Leave him alone.
Yeah, well,
wait a minute. That means you haven't stopped.
Well, fair enough. What I would say is that I have done a terrific job under the circumstances of making myself much healthier. And I think that you will not see any violations of these rules in the White House.
You know what he should have said? He said, Tom, let's go into your life. You have a cheeseburger occasionally? What do you put on that cheeseburger? And I'd like to go through your computer and see what kind of porn you're looking at. Can we rifle through your crap? And maybe something through your past? You ever have a two-on-one there, Tommy? Maybe when you were married. Maybe, I don't know. I mean, I don't know anything about your life. I'm just just throwing things against the wall here.
Wait, is that unhealthy, by the way, Tim?
God almighty. It drives me crazy. Then they say, well, one-fifth of Americans die from smoking. Guess what? 80% of Americans don't.
Yeah.
80% of Americans go through life never knowing the joy of an occasional cigarette to relieve the stress of winning the presidency of the United States. He's the president of the United States. If he wants to smoke, he should smoke. If he wants to walk around the White House in a shorty robe with his wang out, he should be able to do that. You can't use that term?
Tim, you cannot use the F word on the air. I don't care how passionate you are.
All right. All right. These mother effers, how about that? Is that cool?
All right, that's good.
Okay. These mother effers are guys who, you know, they could be interchanged by anybody. Tom Brokaw could be replaced by Randy Wang tomorrow, who could be replaced by, I don't know, another one of these clowns who are on the national level. You know, these guys are not really doing news on the national level. These guys are doing news or local guys doing news. Guys that are getting out there with a camera. You know, guys like Paul Majors, who's sitting there, you know, every single day at 5 o'clock and 11 o'clock, really doing news. Guys who work for Channel 9, they send somebody to San Diego. They really get out there and do the news. This Tom Brokaw sits around all week, and then on Meet the Press for an hour, gets to ask you questions like he's had a tough week. I say F them all. I say you let Barack Obama do what he wants. He became president. If he wants to smoke, if he wants to smoke 5 cigarettes at a time because that releases stress, then let him smoke. Let him smoke weed in the guest house or in the White House. Let him smoke wherever he wants and do whatever he wants. It's his house. God damn. And then he sounds, you know, like oh, my God, did I disappoint somebody? Yeah. He's all nervous.
Poor guy. He's all defensive about it. He's got to save the world, literally, between the global economy and everything else going on with global politics.
He's under a lot of pressure.
And he's getting at him for smoking a cigarette.
And you know what? And this guy, I mean, I'm sweating over here because I can't believe that this is going on in 2008. You know, a guy has a cigarette, and Tom Brokaw is treating him as if he just raped a 5-year-old kid. Now, wait a minute. What do you mean? Well, I've stopped raping 5-year-old kids, but occasionally, you know, I have a 5 or 6-year-old. Well, wait a minute.
Zero tolerance.
You said you quit raping 5-year-olds. Well, I mean, you know, there's a lot of pressure on me, and occasionally I see, you know, a five.
Well, you can't use that term either? Tim, what the hell, man? I know you're passionate about this, but you cannot use cuss words on the air.
All right. But anyway, but he's just talking. He's not talking about raping 5-year-olds. He's talking about buying a legal product with a legal Bic lighter, lighting the Bic lighter, putting it into the cigarette and putting it in his mouth and inhaling and relieving some of his stress. That's it.
Yeah.
And a big deal. Tom Brokaw's making a big deal out of it. And then he stops him like he catches him. Now, wait a minute. You haven't quit.
Gotcha. Oh.
And doesn't that make you more pissed off at Barack Obama for not being like, what? Why are we even having this conversation?
I know,
I won, bitch. I can do whatever I want.
That's exactly what he should be saying. He should be saying, Tom, I hate to say this, but
Tim, you can't use that whole phrase.
All right. It just makes me so crazy that Barack Obama has become president, and now he's got to respond to, you know, why are you still smoking? You know why I'm smoking? Because I'm under pressure, a-holes.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else going on in the news there, Gina?
That's what's happening.
All right. The news with Gina Grad, everybody.
The news with Gina Grad.
Now, say what you will about John Popper, the man can really write a song.
Give us 8.5 minutes, and we'll give you, well, that.
All right, folks. It is the Tim Conway Jr. Show. Thank you very much, Gina Grant, for the news. We're going to take some more phone calls on this ridiculous Obama having to respond to Tom Brokaw about smoking. And Dr. Reef joins us, who's also an addiction medicine specialist, a psychiatrist. Look at that. The guy comes with his own prescription pad. Pretty cool. but if you have a question about you're in a bad relationship, relationships, sex, and drugs, right? Is that right?
Yep.
Relationships, sex, and drugs. Questions for any of those. Perhaps you just found weed and you're really into it. Maybe you have a question about how weed Fs you up. Or maybe you're in a bad relationship, or maybe you're addicted to sex and you want Dr. Reeve to confirm that masturbating, you know, 10 times a day is healthy. 520-9710. That's 520-9710. And 888-520-9710. But if you want to chime in on this and talk about Obama smoking, this guy became president of the United States, and now he's going to answer to Tom Brokaw when he lights up a cigarette. How sick is this? How sick is this effing society? You can do that legally in bars in Oregon, and he can't do it in the White House outside this raincoat.
Hey, Tim, would it have been really tacky if he looked at him straight in the eye and said, you know what? Tim Russert would have never asked me this question.
That's exactly right. Russert was a real guy.
Yeah.
All right, 520-9710, 888-520-9710. Dr. Reef is with us, and we're live on 97.1 FM Talk. What's the matter with your life? It's a topic to be bringing you down.
97.1 FM Talk.
All right, welcome back, everybody. It is the Tim Conway Jr. Show live on 97.1 FM Talk. And every Monday we'd like to have Dr. Reif with us, and Gina Grad joins us as well. Always nice to see the two of you. Now, Dr. Reif, his background is addiction medicine. Is that right?
Yeah.
Look at you.
A medical doctor, and then I did a residency in psychiatry and a subspecialty in addiction medicine.
All right. And you also specialize in relationships, sex, and drugs.
Yep.
You'll never go broke in this town.
I know. I got good job security here, don't I?
Oh, it's the best. You know, we'll take some of these calls, but I also want to ask you why you think people in Southern California are so effing weird. All right?
Well, it depends. Southern California meaning L.A., meaning Hollywood. You know,
I think you can throw the O.C. in there.
Can you throw the O.C. or no? Are we talking O.C. or
not? I think people in Hollywood, Los Angeles, maybe 818-213-310-333.
Yeah. Do it by a very...
Yeah.
You know, I was just in Utah over the weekend. I was in Park City, right? And I was trying to ski, except there was no snow, uh-oh, which was kind of a bummer. And there was this woman there, and she was like, oh my God, you're from L.A.? No way. I totally have to be in L.A. I totally have to be there.
Mm.
And her deal is that she's this woman who was like the beauty queen pageant winner of her high school. And she's totally like this princess who's totally entitled, who gets everything she wants and expects the world to revolve around her in her small town. Now, multiply that by like 1,000 people all over the country, guys and women, and they all come to L.A. They all flock to L.A. to be discovered or to build their art or their talent or whatever. You got all those people going on, and a lot of them are entitled, and they all have to interact with each other. And
right,
then you throw the craziness of L.A. and the rejection of the industry, and you piece it all together, and you've got all sorts of people here that have stuff going on.
What is constant rejection over a five-year period do to a person?
Well, let's ask Gina.
Heyo.
No, I don't mean on a personal level.
I know Gina well, so I can
Midnight
that.
Shows never like the 10. Come twice, folks. He's great.
What is the damage, though? 5 years of you're an a-hole.
Listen, if your identity is based on what kind of job you get as an actor or as a musician or as whatever, and you constantly go into these auditions and you get rejected over and over and over, and you don't even know why you're getting rejected most of the time. You're just getting rejected. It starts to get to you, and you start to feel like you're less than, and you're not worthy, and you're not going to amount to anything in your life. And you've been so indoctrinated with, I got to be an actor, or I got to be a musician, or I got to be this, that you're not able to laterally look at other careers that are safer because you have this vibe of this instant gratification. I'm going to make it, man. I'm going to make it. And
yeah, and it seems like show business has a longer window to try to make it than any other business. Like, if you wanted to become a banker, right, and you spend 5 years trying to become a banker and work as an executive in a bank, and everyone kept saying, no, you eventually go into some other business. But you could be in show business or around show business for like 20 or 30 years going on auditions, and, you know, for 20 or 30 years, and you're still like, it's right around the corner.
Yeah.
My big break. Mm.
You're
right
almost
around the corner.
You're almost there.
It's weird how that happens.
And you know what it does? It messes up your thinking. Like, I had a guy that I knew, and he was like, dude, you never guess, man. I've been doing this 10 years. You're never going to guess what happened. I go, what happened? He goes, I think I'm up for a Pepto-Bismol commercial. It's awesome. This guy was a classically trained actor from Yale. And he wants to do, like, you know, the little roll that you do in the Pepto-Bismol commercial where they jump backwards and shake their butt and turn around and grind on something? That was his dream come true. It changes your thinking.
Oh, it does. I mean, you know, speaking of that, there's a drug out there called Astilin. Have you ever familiar with that?
Heard of it,
It's Astilin, I believe. And there's three guys singing a song, and they all have the word Astilin in three different syllables on their black shirts in white letters. So there's Astilin, and there's three guys. You know you can't. You know, like a barbershop quartet minus the fourth dude. And so that guy who got the job is calling his mom and dad back in Milwaukee and go, hey, I got a job. Look at that. They turn on the TV, and he's the ass in Astilin. And that's his big gig.
Mom, Dad, aren't you proud?
He's the ass. Hey, look, I'm the ass in Astilin. Or, you know, I've got a diarrhea commercial. You know, like the cab driver.
Diarrhea.
That's a and, Pepto spot.
Yeah, and he's walking
See?
Around. You know, he's walking around like the you know, the cab driver. You know, that gotta go
right
now. He's like, hey, look at that. Hey, Ma, I got a diarrhea. I'm the lead. I'm the lead in the diarrhea commercial.
But can you imagine this guy's parents? If they helped the kid get through school, it's one thing to say, okay, I could be a doctor, I could be a lawyer, I could be a banker, but I'm going to be an actor, and I want you to help me pay for 8 years of classical training. And then he's like getting off on a Pepto-Bismol commercial. It's like...
I have a really good friend who's also a classically trained actor who... We all got phone calls and emails when his big billboard campaign came out. And I was like, God, I can't wait to see this billboard. You know, this healthy young guy is this great billboard. I roll up to a sunset in La Cienega, see a cracked out, sinewy, I don't know what they photoshopped, or 5 o'clock shadowed, sunken in eyes of my friend. It just says, I lost me to meth.
Oh, I've seen that.
That's my friend. That's really good friend.
Oh, that's
never since he was 14 years old.
Does he do meth?
No!
See, that's false advertising.
I have my uncle, Wally, lives up in Seattle, outside of Seattle, Washington. And he was an actor down here, and he's a writer. He wrote for, like, Laverne and Shirley and Happy Days. And he was an actor. He did a bunch of bit parts. And he moved up there to get away from all the craziness of Hollywood. And he sends me recently a new, like, a photo campaign or a new ad campaign that he's the star of. And he's the guy... who is the homeless dude who's waiting for a turkey dinner on Thanksgiving. You know, he's like a down-and-out guy. He's like, could you help feed one more guy?
That's
but
it.
He's very proud of me. He's, hey, look, I'm on the side of a bus as the homeless guy.
Yeah.
All right, we got to take a break here. Come back. Gina Grad joins us. Dr. Reef is with us. DrReef.com, R-E-E-F.com. And we'll take your phone calls. Relationships, sex, drugs, I don't know what you got going. Maybe you got radical depression going on out there. 520-9710. That's 520-9710 and 888-520-9710. William, Phil, Chris, Alyssa, you will be first. Stay on hold. And it is the Tim Conway Jr. Show live on 97.1 FM Talk.
Laid out of my side, Santa winds blowing hot from the north. We were born to ride. Roll down the window, put down the top, crank up the Beach Boys, baby. Don't let the music stop. We gonna ride it till we just can't ride it no more. From the side.
Get complete shows from Adam Carolla, Frosty, Heidi, and Frank, Danny Bonaducci, Tom Likas, and more. Just go to 971fmtalk.com and subscribe with iTunes.